I am in an interracial relationship, so I was speaking to how this could overturn the validity of my marriage.
I mean, this is really interesting. We were just talking about this, that Justice Thomas said, not joined by the other justices, but it may well be the direction that the court is going, that now they can move on to outlawing contraception as well as gay marriage. He did not mention Loving, where you're referring to the name of the case for interracial marriage. He is, you know, married to Jenny Thomas, who is that's a whole other story because of her involvement with the January 6th insurrection. But talk about what you feel you could accomplish as a state senator of Rhode Island if you are elected.
Yes. So when I get elected, we have the ability in the state to provide abortion access and reproductive care to those who are on Medicaid and to state employees. So currently, if you are a state employee for Rhode Island, you do not have access to the reproductive care as far as abortion care if you need it. Our previous governor had to choose one policy that did not cover abortion access, and they decided to choose nine. So as a state employee, if you do have an ectopic pregnancy, or should you just decide you don't want to start a family at the time, you have to pay out of pocket to cover your abortion procedure when your insurance should cover it. So as a senator, I will work hard to pass the Equality in Abortion Care Act, and that's to provide coverage to people on Medicaid and state employees to have the abortion care that they need.
I want to thank you so much for being with us in the case you're referring to, Loving versus Virginia. Jennifer Rourke, candidate for Rhode Island State Senate. That does it for our show. Happy birthday to John Randolph. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland, no compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Tune in to KBOO on Friday, July 1st through Monday, July 4th for the 35th annual Waterfront Blues Festival. Live from Tom McCall Waterfront Park, we'll be broadcasting 4 days of blues, soul, funk, and R&B from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. daily. That's the live broadcast of the 35th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival from July 1st through the 4th from noon to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station. More information can be found at kboo.fm/waterfrontblues.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregonians protest the recent Supreme Court decision to strike down abortion protections. The end of Roe v. Wade brings the beginning of many trigger law bans. And the Supreme Court rules to allow prayer in public schools. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, June 27th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Thousands gathered in downtown Portland in the wake of the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The decision ends constitutional protection for abortion health care. Demonstrators gathered on the waterfront and eventually marched to Lonsdale Square. Abortion is protected by law in Oregon, and the same goes for California and Washington. Idaho has a trigger law that will ban the procedure in the coming weeks. Protests in Portland continued into the weekend, with some participants breaking windows in buildings and vehicles and scrawling graffiti. The local protest against the Supreme Court decision to leave abortion decisions up to the individual states began with a gathering of around 200 people at Grant Park on Saturday. A smaller group of about 60 of them, most dressed in black, left and smashed windows on banks, coffee shops, a Portland school van, at least one car, and the Mother and Child Education Nonprofit Center in Northeast Portland. According to Executive Director Maura White, it does not steer people away from abortion, but rather provide services to people who have decided to have children. The center was left with about $10,000 in damages, including smashed windows and graffiti. A group in Nevada offers help to abortion seekers in and out of the state, a service which they expect to be increasingly important in the wake of Roe being overturned. Suzanne Potter has more.
Nevada may become a magnet for abortion seekers from around the country now that the Supreme Court has overturned Roe v. Wade, allowing states to ban the procedure. Voters enshrined the right to an abortion in Nevada state law in 1990, so it is legal up to 24 weeks of gestation and later with some health exceptions. Nikki Levy with the nonprofit Wild West Access Fund says her organization will help Nevadans and people from out of state get care.
So we help folks with the cost of abortion care, the actual procedure or the medication. We also help with practical support like arranging rides or hotel rooms if somebody needs to travel.
Abortion opponents cite religious and moral objections. Pro-choice protesters rallied in Las Vegas on Friday against the decision. Abortion providers are expecting an influx of people from Arizona, Utah, Idaho, and elsewhere since flights to Nevada are relatively inexpensive. A surgical abortion usually costs about $600, and the medicine runs between $100 and $250. Levy says Nevada Medicaid does not cover the procedure.
Nevada Medicaid doesn't cover abortion. Most insurance companies don't cover abortion in the state of Nevada unless the abortion is necessary for the health and safety of the pregnant person and in the case of rape and incest.
Nevada does allow people to have a telemedicine appointment and then get a prescription filled, but it is not legal to get the pills and mail them to someone else. People from other states can get more information at abortionfinder.org and abortionfunds.org. For Nevada News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis recently vetoed funding for birth control and now plans to expand abortion restrictions in the state. Abortion advocates say Florida is making pregnancy the only option. Trimel Gomes has more.
Abortion rights proponents are warning that most Republican leaders in Florida are set on ensuring that pregnancy is the only option after the governor recently vetoed funding for birth control. Leading up to the Supreme Court's historic decision overturning Roe v. Wade, Governor Ron DeSantis vetoed for the second year in a row a $2 million proposal to help low-income women access long-term birth control methods such as IUDs. Stephanie Frame with Planned Parenthood of Southwest and Central Florida says she's seen a consistent erosion of resources for women by Republican leaders, but no effort to provide safety nets to existing families.
It does seem like the message is, pregnancy is the option, the only option we want you to consider, and almost encouraging it by saying that we're not going to help you get access to affordable birth controls.
Senate President Wilton Simpson, a Republican, advocated for the funding and even described the program as a healthy part of a pro-life agenda. However, abortion opponents like the Florida Catholic Conference have urged the governor to veto funding for the reversible contraception program. Frame says, despite the cuts, organizations like Planned Parenthood and local health departments can still help those in need. Some observers were anticipating the Supreme Court's action, but the reality of it appears to have taken many by surprise. Florida House Democratic leader Fentress Driscoll shared her dismay on Instagram Live, but quickly turned to offering resources for those feeling helpless.
I think the main thing is just to not be idle, because there's just so much work to do. It's such a heavy lift. There's no one organization or individual who could possibly do it all. So I promise you there's an organization or candidate out there who needs you.
Driscoll mentioned groups including Ruthless Florida and the Bridget Alliance that help people seeking abortions. Currently, abortion is legal in Florida, but only for pregnancies up to 15 weeks starting July 1st. Today, Planned Parenthood and other reproductive health providers will ask a judge to issue a temporary emergency injunction to stop the new law from going into effect. This is Trimel Gomes for Florida News Connection.
In North Dakota, a trigger law banning abortion will take effect in just 3.5 weeks. The state's only abortion care provider is planning to move to Minnesota. But a total abortion ban hasn't always been the preference for voters in North Dakota. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Pro-choice advocates are calling on voters to make access to abortion a big issue in the November midterm election. The countdown has begun. In less than a month, North Dakota's trigger law will make abortion illegal except to save the pregnant person's life, now that the U.S. Supreme Court has overturned Roe v. Wade. Amy Jacobson with Prairie Action ND says a lot of North Dakotans want access to abortion care.
North Dakota voters rejected an abortion ban in 2014 by a 2-to-1 margin. Those are Republican voters defeating an abortion ban in our state. So I would just really call on them to reflect on where their party is going and what this means to the people of our state.
The state legislature, citing religious and moral objections, tried to add an abortion ban to the state constitution, but the accompanying ballot measure failed in 2014. In mid-May, pro-choice protesters held Ban Off Our Bodies rallies in Bismarck, Fargo, Grand Forks, and Minot. More are planned for early July. The state's only abortion provider, the Red River Women's Clinic in Fargo, announced plans to move across the border to Moorhead, Minnesota in the near future. Jacobson laments what she calls an ultra-conservative takeover of the Republican Party.
This decision really comes from the right-wing majority of extremist judges that have undermined the fundamental right to make our own decisions about our health care, our bodies, and our families.
North Dakota already has a ban on abortion consultations via telehealth. Jacobson predicts that when the next legislative session begins in January, lawmakers will introduce bills to further restrict abortion by making it illegal to travel to another state for an abortion or to help someone else do so. For Prairie News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
State lawmakers in California are starting today to add abortion rights to the state constitution. Suzanne Potter has more with the legislators.
The California State Legislature is expected to vote as early as today to place a measure on the November ballot to enshrine abortion rights into the state constitution. The move is a reaction to the decision Friday by the Supreme Court to reverse Roe v. Wade and lift federal abortion protections. Nearly half the states are expected to make abortion illegal. State Attorney General Rob Bonta, however, slammed the ruling.
This decision is an attack on privacy, on freedom, on self-determination, on equality. This decision is an attack on women.
Abortion proponents cite religious and moral objections. On Friday, Governor Gavin Newsom signed Assembly Bill 1666, which protects California abortion providers from civil liability based on laws in other states that may prohibit people from traveling to get abortion care. State Senate President Pro Tem Tony Atkins vowed to help abortion seekers from other states.
Those inhumane laws will not cross California borders. We will not leave women and families impacted by the fall of Roe versus Wade and the backwards, reckless policies of other states without options. We will not do that. We are here to further rights, not take them away.
In May, when the Supreme Court decision leaked, Newsom proposed a $125 million package to bolster the state's ability to handle an influx of patients from other states. His wife, first partner Jennifer Siebel Newsom, spoke out strongly against the court's rollback of women's rights.
This is toxic masculinities at work in the highest court in the country. Domination and control of women's bodily autonomy is so deeply ingrained in the patriarchy that unfortunately still rules our country.
A package of other bills designed to increase access is expected to cross the governor's desk in the next few weeks. People looking for help paying for an abortion or traveling to get one can find information at abortionfunds.org. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Protests erupt around the country in response to the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade, a move the conservative lawmakers have applauded. With more on the story, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. No! Demonstrations continued all weekend after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. In Iowa, a truck barreled through a crowd of abortion rights protesters. In Arizona, demonstrators were tear-gassed by police. The Department of Homeland Security is warning of rising threats against judges and state officials. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren called for expanding the Supreme Court.
This court has lost legitimacy. They have burned whatever legitimacy they may still have had after their gun decision, after their voting decision, after their union decision. They just took the last of it and set a torch to it.
Expansion would give President Joe Biden the chance to name more justices and change the court's balance. But conservative lawmakers hailed the decision, which will permit states to outlaw abortion. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson.
This is a day that those in the pro-life movement has worked for over 40 years. I didn't think it would come this quickly.
Republican Representative Mary Miller of Illinois drew intense condemnation for calling the decision a victory for white life during a Saturday rally with former President Donald Trump.
President Trump, on behalf of all the MAGA patriots in America, I want to thank you for the historic victory for white life in the Supreme Court yesterday.
The comment brought cheers from the crowd, but Miller's spokesperson says she misread her prepared speech. Republican South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem said she wants to ban telemedicine with providers who might prescribe abortion through pills.
We've already had a bill passed that said on telemedicine abortions that we don't believe it should be available because it is a dangerous situation for those individuals.
A new poll finds more than half of Americans say overturning Roe is a step backward. 31% called it a step forward. At the White House Saturday, President Biden signed into law the most significant gun control bill to pass Congress in 30 years.
Their message to us was do something. I don't know how many times I heard that. Just do something. For God's sake, just do something. Well, today, we did.
14 Republicans voted with Democrats to support it. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 60 degrees. The heat advisory for Northwest Oregon in Southwest Washington ends tonight at 8 p.m. Tomorrow's weather will be partly cloudy with a high of 77 degrees. Today in history, in 1915, American author, social activist, and key figure in the Asian American movement, Grace Lee Boggs, was born. The quote of the day is from Boggs, who said, "We never know how our small activities will affect others through the invisible fabric of our connectedness. In this exquisitely connected world, it's never a question of critical mass. It's always about critical connections." Native leaders voiced their anger about the Supreme Court abortion decision, leaving the protection for the procedure up to the states. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native advocates in New Mexico voice anger over Friday's U.S. Supreme Court decision to end the federal right to abortion and leave authority up to states. Elder and lifelong Native advocate Noreen Kelly joined reproductive health and advocacy groups on a press call Friday following news of the ruling. Kelly says in the Native community, women are often the decision makers in the household, and men have a role as equal partners. She says male politicians and judges should not have access to a woman's body autonomy.
Our decisions are owned. They're made with care. And there's reasonings and holiness behind the decisions that women make. So it really angers me, and it saddens me that someone still thinks that they can make decisions for women. And I appreciate all the men that are supporting us, but they didn't have that right to speak on our behalf.
Crystal Curley, director of the Native women-led organization Indigenous Lifeways, was also in attendance at the press conference. Curley says Native women already face challenges when it comes to health care and lack access to abortion. Curley says in wake of the high court decision, her organization will continue to advocate for Native women's rights.
We know that Indigenous women have always been a threat to this colonial system since day one. And now 500 plus years, women and pregnant people as a whole are now a threat to this colonial system. And it's now that this time is so pivotal that we come together and unite.
Abortion in New Mexico is likely to remain legal, while neighboring states in the Southwest are expected to see changes. The University of Alaska Southeast is set to offer a free option for Alaska Native language classes starting in the fall. Claire Strimple reports.
Alaska Native Languages Professor Hune Lance Twitchell says this is part of revitalizing the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian languages.
We didn't put ourselves in this situation. Our language was banished. It was prohibited. It was made illegal. We were tortured and abused and all kinds of things to get us to stop speaking. So why should we have to pay to learn our own language?
There's been a decline in Alaska Native languages over the last 100 years due to genocide and assimilation. For the Tlingit language, fewer than 50 people who have been speaking the language since birth are still alive. Many elders who were birth speakers died during the COVID-19 pandemic. But Twitchell says there's also been a shift towards language revitalization over the last decade. For example, Outer Coast, a school in Sitka, offered a free year of Tlingit courses during the pandemic. Twitchell says 600 people signed up. The move towards free classes at UAS is the next step.
I think it's going to be medicinal. It's going to alter the course of the way things are going, and it's really exciting.
Arts and Sciences Dean Corinne Silcatis says one of their main jobs is to support faculty and find ways to say yes to projects like this.
You have to open doors. You have to bring seats to tables. And I think the way to do that is to create more access. And I think creating free curriculum is a way to create more access for people.
Dean Silcatis says the free classes are made possible with help from Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation and a Language Pathways grant. Students who select the free option won't earn credits or receive a grade. Reporting for National Native News, I'm Claire Strimple in Juneau.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Some of the companies showing support for LGBTQ plus folks this Pride Month have also supported politicians that have eroded the community's rights. Eric Tegetoff talks to the executive director of Q Center to learn more.
June is Pride Month, and businesses are showing their support for the LGBTQ community in a number of ways. But some corporations are being called out for also supporting anti-LGBTQ candidates for office. Ian Morton heads the Q Center in Portland. He says his community has come a long way from the days when participants in Pride parades couldn't show their faces for fear of retaliation from their employers. But he adds the hypocrisy of some companies' support this month is disappointing.
Seeing organizations who are willing to stand against the community that they would purport to serve or to celebrate makes the LGBTQ plus community very wary of where they put their support and whether that rainbow flag that goes up for the 30 days, if that's actually meaningful or if it's just performative.
A report from last month found 25 major corporations that showed support during Pride had also given a total of $10 million in donations to support members of Congress who earned a zero rating on the Human Rights Campaign's scorecard. Craig Hill is with Beneficial State Bank, which works with the Q Center. He says his bank strives to work in service of social equity and environmental sustainability. Hill thinks it's misleading for companies to hoist rainbow flags and at the same time support discriminatory policies at the legislative level.
Some of the nation's biggest banks, for example, fund anti-LGBTQ plus policies through their political donations, despite publicly supporting those agendas and sponsoring Pride Month events. It's really a form of rainbow washing, if we're being honest.
Hill says people can use websites like Mighty Deposit to find out how their financial institutions are using their money. Morton says it's helpful to know he's working with companies that align with his own values.
Having those moments whenever you recognize that the folks you're doing business with actually have concern about your community's well-being and want to show up in meaningful ways, that helps folks, especially in the nonprofit sector and in the advocacy sector, to give them the energy to soldier on.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Supreme Court isn't finished with its decision season. It ruled today in favor of a football coach from Washington who wanted to pray on the 50-yard line with his student athletes. The court ruled 6-3 that the coach had the constitutional right to do so. The conservative members of the court ruled in favor of the coach, saying it was the coach's free speech right to pray with his athletes. The liberal justices dissented, saying that as a public school employee, the coach knew the limitations of the job he signed up to do and that students are particularly vulnerable and in need of protection. They said the public nature of the prayer meant that students felt compelled to participate, whether they wanted to or not, and that it was an issue of the separation of church and state. The pandemic has added a new factor that has to be taken into account in legal cases where a doctor might have acted carelessly. It has affected how cases of medical negligence are approached. Eric Tegetoff speaks with a Tacoma lawyer who specializes in these kinds of cases.
Medical negligence cases in Washington and elsewhere have taken on a new shape during the pandemic, as hospital resources have been strained and the potential usefulness of certain treatments has ebbed and flowed. Drugs like ivermectin, for instance, were touted online as a potential COVID-19 treatment, but ultimately lacked scientific evidence to back up those claims. Elizabeth Calora is a Tacoma lawyer who specializes in medical negligence cases. She says there are some legal requirements for determining if a health professional acted carelessly, which have been affected by COVID.
We need to figure out what a reasonably prudent provider should have been doing in that context. And that usually means talking to experts in the field and then determining if what the provider did in the moment or over the course of several visits violated that standard of care.
Calora says after that, the person has to prove that the breach is what caused the damages. The Washington State Legislature modified evaluations of negligence cases in 2021 so that resources and staffing must be taken into account. For instance, hospitals have often lacked beds at the height of different COVID waves, a factor outside of doctors or facilities' control. Calora says the standard of care evolves over time. What was once an acceptable medical practice in the 1970s, for example, might not be anymore.
But usually it happens in a much slower time frame than what we experienced at the start of the pandemic. With COVID, you had physicians all over the world, basically makes me think of throwing spaghetti on the wall to see what sticks. Everyone was trying everything they could.
Calora says the unforeseen nature of the pandemic has made it hard to bring medical negligence cases forward. However, she adds that shouldn't discourage people from speaking with an attorney if they feel they or a loved one has been wronged.
Even though things were bad, it doesn't give people license to practice beneath the standard of care.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, June 27th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, and Tramel Gomes. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO. At 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy. At 9, Alternative Radio. At 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Then at 11, it's Times Like Now with Trevor Collins. At 11:30, it's Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
This week on Making Contact.
I think it's one of those things where I speak on being intersex. Like, so not just being a psychotherapist, but I'm also an activist and an educator. And when I mention that I am, you can see it in their eyes. They start thinking about what my genitals look like. And it becomes a process where I have to sort of like, oh, no, my eyes are up here, right? Like, we're having a conversation with a whole person. And not just that part of me. I am a breadth of experiences. This is one part of who I am. And the reason I'm talking to you today is because of that identity, but that's not the only thing about me.
I Am Because I Am explores the expansion of gender identity and presumed roles in our society. It looked beyond the socially constructed ideas of what is male, female, masculine, or feminine. Especially considering Trump's administration's attempt to redefine gender to be solely based on a person's genitalia at birth, thus potentially threatening transgender, intersex, and non-binary identity. In this show, we'll ask questions such as, what does it mean when individuals challenge specific